Okay. So let us have a look at this last question. Wow, there's lots of questions today. We'll see how we go. Okay. Okay, dear Arjan, when I was 7 years old, I saw my grandfather after he passed away. Why children can see ghosts? Can they harm humans? Thank you, Vinetta. Okay, that's very interesting, isn't it? You see your grandfather after you passed away. So presumably that was a real seeing. You were awake, presumably. That's probably what you mean here. Sometimes people see parents or family members, they see them have passed away in sleep. It's quite common. And that because when you're asleep, you're often more open to these kind of phenomena, it seems. So people often see it in sleep. But if you saw it when you're awake, that's very interesting, isn't it? That probably means you are, seeing a ghost. And maybe as a small child, you're more open to these kind of things. Maybe it's easier for a small child to see. I don't know. I have heard other stories, too, of people seeing these kind of things. But I think it's quite rare. The most common one is you just feel the presence of somebody, right? You feel strange or you have a premonition of something. You know something is going to happen. Sometimes you hear the stories that you feel that somebody has passed away, and then soon afterwards you get the phone call that they died just an hour ago or whatever. So these are things that are quite common. But seeing a ghost is quite interesting. Can they harm humans? I have never heard of any ghosts actually harming humans. I don't think so, because they are like in a slightly parallel realm, right? Even the fact that you see them is very unusual because of that parallel, being in a parallel realm. So they can't really do very much to you. And anyway, if it is your grandfather, the chances are is that he probably loves you. He doesn't want to hurt you at all. He's probably just coming to say goodbye and then see you. Maybe I'll see you later again when you eventually become an old grandmother and then you pass away too. So ghosts don't normally hurt human beings. I don't think you have anything to fear from that. That's pretty cool, isn't it? You've seen your grandfather after he died. That's quite a nice thing. Dear Arjan, thank you very much. I always enjoy your retreat. The instructions given are so clear and straightforward. Question, what the sutta meant by liberation by wisdom, liberation by mind? Okay, so there's two types of liberation that are spoken about in the suttas. There's also something called the liberation in both ways. But liberation by wisdom and liberation by mind essentially are just two aspects of the liberation of the arahant, the fully awakened person. Two aspects of that liberation. And they refer to two complementary things that happen when you become an arahant. So liberation by mind is the freedom from defilements, right? There's no defilements there. So liberation of mind is like also when you go into a state of samadhi, of jhana, whatever, you have liberation of mind because there's no defilements there. And it's also true for the arahant. The arahant also has a free liberation of mind because there's no defilements in the mind. Liberation by wisdom is the liberation which is more than just the elimination of defilements, but also the wisdom aspect. So you're liberated by understanding the nature of the five khandhas, by having seen reality as it actually is. Right? And so you are free from delusion, basically. That means free from the kind of profound delusion that underlies the whole process of samsara. So there's like two slightly different ways. One is the kind of the clear seeing of something, and one is the elimination of the defilements. So slightly different ways of types of liberation. Okay. Next one. Three sadhus to those generous people who provided dana all the way through retreat. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And what a wonderful thing that is when people come every day to bring dana, and they come in and offer the food, and then they depart again. Isn't that a wonderful thing that happens? It shows you how much good support there is for these kind of things. People understand the value of these retreats, and there is a lot of support in this Buddhist society here to support us all. Wonderful thing. Okay. Dear Ajahn, we have heard that the Arahant Moggallana was a Mara in one life. So in that case, Mara is a physical form. Please explain. Hope to listen at your teaching sometime in Jhana Grove again. Okay, so Mara, the idea of a Mara in the suttas is mostly Mara is like a psychological thing. It's, you know, you have the Mara of the tempting, the tempter inside of you, the thing who wants to kind of take you away, all the defilements that want to take you away from the spiritual life, whatever it is. That is the usual meaning of Mara in the suttas. And sometimes Mara is also perhaps the kind of like the social conditions at the time, right? You hear like the bhikkhunis, the nuns at the time, and the Mara comes and say, oh, you know, you can't do this, this is not for you. Because it was in those days, it was presumed that, you know, women shouldn't be doing these kind of things. So that was more like perhaps the Mara of the social conditions, the kind of, you know, similar to the defilements. But occasionally, you're right, occasionally the Mara seems to refer to a past for, you know, to actually a being. But most of the cases when Mara is talked about in this way, it is kind of almost like stories. There are stories in the suttas. And stories tend often to be a bit legendary and mythological. And it's very hard sometimes with these kind of stories to actually know whether it's literally meant to be an actual being, or whether it is just meant as a symbolically, or it's just a story, or what it is. Sometimes very hard to know. So I'm not sure what the answer to that question is, whether Mara is to be regarded as a real being in those cases, or whether it is more psychological. But I think in practice, what matters is the psychological Mara, right? The one that comes into our head and says, nah, don't worry, don't do that. You know, there's more fun to hang out in the world and to do these kind of things. That is a real problematic one. That is the kind of the Mara I think we need to focus on. The other ones is more speculative. Okay. Okay, Devante, my father who passed away recently looked after us well. However, he made a lot of conflicts among the children. He wanted to get children's attention all the time. He didn't practice spiritual path, but went for a few retreats. I'm scared of his rebirth. Is there anything I can do to help him to be born in a good realm with metta? The best thing to do for somebody to get reborn in a good realm is what is sometimes in Buddhism called the transfer of merit. It's not a very good word, because it's not actually, you can't really transfer merit, because we all have our own good karma. We all have our own karma that we have to reap the results from. But it's more like giving people the opportunity for their own karma to ripen, right? So do something good for somebody else so they can feel happy because of that. And this is what we often do in the Buddha's teachings. You go to the temple, or you do some charity work somewhere, and you do that, and then you let them know in your mind, I do this for you, right? And then people say, wow, that's very kind. And then they reap some benefit because you're doing an action of kindness on their behalf. And this seems to work according to the suttas. So because this might still be around, they might still be here, they might still know our mind state, because you know, once you are dead, there's more of a chance of kind of mind-to-mind contact in that way. So this is the first thing to do. And the other thing you can do, which I always like to do at funerals, is to ask for forgiveness, right? Very often there maybe some things that we don't feel so happy about the past. So you say, you know, everything I have done, body, speech or mind, please forgive me for that. So you can fare on happily. And then you can also tell them, in case they feel bad about something, I forgive you too. If there's anything, please forget about all that. It's nothing. Please just be happy wherever you are, and forgive me for all those, whatever I may have done. And in this way, you know, you can kind of lighten any burdens that might be there. Throw out a few stones from your heart, so to speak, and then hopefully they will be better. And then wish them well, right? In a metta meditation, sitting down, and you can think of the person who's passed away. May you be happy where you are. May you be well. May you be. Wherever you are, be. May you make the most and the best of that situation you're in. According to the sutta, it's possible to be reborn again. if you have been reborn in the ghost realm, and somebody says, may you be well and happy, and does something good on your behalf, that can actually, on occasions, be enough to kind of make the person rejoice and then move on to a better rebirth as a consequence. Anyway, that's what they say. What they say in the sutta, so I take that as being right. Okay, so next one here. While staying at the Thai monastery here, I came across a book on the practice of Anapanasati. This is mindfulness of breathing here, translated from the sermons of a well-known senior monk. I don't recall the author, but can I find a similar book in Perth that you may know of? So maybe that author was Ajahn Buddhadasa, perhaps. Buddhadasa is a very famous, he's dead now, but he was a very famous monk in Thailand 20, 30 years ago, and I certainly know he wrote a well-known book on Anapanasati. But there should be no problem if you go on the internet, the Buddhist Society, there should be lots of talks there, a few talks there on Anapanasati. There is Ajahn Brahm's book, The Basic Method of Meditation, is basically a book on Anapanasati practice. And then there is the Buddha's Word, and that is what I really would recommend you to have a look at. There is the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha's teaching on Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. And that is always the best guide, right? So read all these other monks, it's fine, but come back to the word of the Buddha. That's the only way you can be relatively sure that you know that you're getting good information about this sort of practice. I should have liked to maybe go through the Anapanasati Sutta on this retreat. There isn't enough time now, because it is actually very quite inspiring to look at. But really, what we have done now so far on this retreat, it leads up to the Anapanasati. All of this is like the groundwork. And only now, does the mindfulness of breathing actually come properly into its own. After all that basic work, now the mindfulness of breathing starts. So maybe next year, I will, or next time, I'm not sure when next time is going to be, but next time we can, anyway, we'll see what happens with that, but then we can maybe do the Anapanasati Sutta itself to bring that also out, because that is part of this training, of course, on the spiritual path. So I hope that answers your question. I think it's likely that the Thai monk you're talking about was Venerable Buddhadasa. Buddha and then Dasa, D-A-S-A. And his book is called just Anapanasati. And then there is the Anapanasati Sutta, which is in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses, number 118. A very well-known sutta by the Buddha. Okay. Next question here. Dear Ajahn, can you read minds? They say that when you get enlightened and become an arahat, you can read minds. I am scared to look at you. Okay. I am afraid that you may be able to read my mind. When I see you, I look the other way and quickly take a detour. Okay. I'm afraid you might read my unwholesome thoughts, but I ate all the eggs at breakfast. How I ate all the eggs at breakfast. How I took all the spring rolls at lunchtime, and the amount of cheese and chocolate at dinner time. I can start a shop. Can you read minds? When can I learn to read minds? Okay. Is it when I get into the first, second, third, or fourth jhana? And can you change minds or stop things happening if you know it's going to happen? Okay. Well, the first thing is that it's extremely rare to find anyone who can read minds. They say that some people say that Ajahn Chah perhaps could read minds. I'm not sure if he could. Sometimes people tend to read these things into people. I've seen this happen so many times that people say, "Oh, this monk, he can definitely read minds." Then I asked this monk, "Can you read minds?" No, I can't read minds. And this happens again and again and again. People read because it feels like, sometimes it feels like somebody's reading your mind because they say something. Wow, that was exactly what I was thinking. It's just too can't be a coincidence. But the reality is that we're all the same, right? We all have the same problems. We all have the same defilements. So if you say a lot of general things about meditation and about the mind, it's bound, some of that stuff is bound to be directly to you. And it's got nothing to do with mind reading whatsoever. It just has to do with the Buddha's teaching, being about the mind, right? Being about what we are like as human beings. And we are basically all the same. It's a terrible thing to say that, because people feel, no, I want to be special, I don't want to be the same as everybody else. But that is usually, unfortunately, the case. Which is perfectly okay, by the way, isn't it? So, let's say that enlightened beings become an arahant, you can read minds. Sometimes the arahant can read minds, sometimes they can't, right? There is no absolute correlation between becoming enlightened and having all these psychic powers. It is possible to be fully enlightened, to understand the world exactly as it is, but not have any idea what other people are thinking whatsoever. So that is the first thing. It's possible to be enlightened without having... But that doesn't mean you have to be afraid of arahants. Arahants know that your mind isn't the best, right? They are aware of that. They have seen minds before. They know that this is what minds are like. And you are, again, you are just, your mind is probably just exactly the same as the mind of everybody else. There's no distinction there. So you never have to be afraid of an arahant. An arahant is somebody who has endless compassion, endless understanding, who understands the minds of ordinary human beings. So you can feel completely safe, even if you have the kind of the most dodgy mind around, even the most unwholesome thoughts imaginable, still the arahant will have compassion for you, right? They have compassion for Angulimala, the murderer who killed 100 people or whatever, or 1,000 people. Have you killed 1,000 people yet? Probably not. I assume that you haven't killed 1,000 people, so you're probably okay. When can I learn to read minds? Okay, are you sure that you really want to read minds? Are you sure that's a good idea? Why exactly would you like to learn to read minds? And you have to ask yourself that question first of all, because reading other people's minds is considered not...